Verses number 34 and 35 of Surah Tawbah. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إن كثيرا من الأحبار والرهبان ليأكلون أموال الناس بالباطل ويصدون عن سبيل الله والذين يكنزون الذهب والفضة ولا ينفقونها في سبيل الله فبشرهم بعذاب أليم يوم يحمى عليها في نار جهنم فتكوى بها جباههم وجنوبهم وظهورهم هذا ما كنزتم لأنفسكم فذوقوا ما كنتم تكنزون. O you who have faith, indeed many of the scribes and monks wrongfully eat up the people's wealth and bar them from the way of Allah, those who treasure up gold and silver and do not spend it in the way of Allah, inform them of a painful punishment on the day when these shall be heated in hellfire and therewith branded on their foreheads, their sides and their backs, and told, this is what you treasured up for yourselves. We discussed about the concept of monks and scribes eating up the wealth of the people wrongfully and also barring them from the way of Allah. And there was a long discussion about وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِضَّةَ, and those who treasure up gold and silver, and the jurisprudential problems that we faced, and different opinions about it. Now, we have وَلَا يُنْفِقُونَهَا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ, and do not spend it in the way of Allah. We discussed briefly that the way of Allah is whatever would somehow support and fortify the cause of the people, and the foremost and the very important cause is the cause of religion. So لا ينفقونها في سبيل الله, do not spend it in the way of Allah, does not mean the ordinary type of spendings, charity spendings that people have, usually in giving money to the poor and to those who ask for it. That's something which we have to do as a matter of course, and that's something that people of great treasures and great wealth usually do not mind to spend. That's something very trivial. This spending it in the way of God is actually to spend it for the cause of the people and cause of the religion of the people, of course, in great amounts. And this was what actually brought up the discussion forth, that okay, what is the limit of something, some wealth being treasure and not being treasure, which we had the discussion of Amirul Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib saying whatever exceeds 4,000 is treasure, whatever below it is just sustenance, and meaning that whatever is above 4,000 could be spent by the authorities wherever the need comes, and all other discussions. So this Sabilillah, the way of God, which is of course very frequently mentioned in the Quran, the way of God, Sabilillah, of course, is the cause of the people. Allah doesn't need anything. When you are told to do something fi Sabilillah, for the way of God, especially spending money, it means spending it for the cause of people. And of course, the foremost cause of the people is for the cause of their guidance, which is religion. So the first issue is to spend money for the religion, and secondly, to spend money wherever other needs of people, other causes are there. So those who do not do it, فَبَشِّرْهُمْ بِعَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ. There is one very interesting and beautiful hadith reported from the Prophet, peace be on him, from Salim ibn Abil Ja'ad, who was a companion of the Prophet. He says, when the Prophet, peace be on him, when this verse was revealed, وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِضَّةِ, those who treasure up gold and silver and do not spend it for the cause of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, The Prophet, upon receiving this revelation, said, "Tabban lil-zahab, tabban lil-fiddah, yukarriruha thalatha." Three times he said, "Curse be on gold, curse be on silver." And of course, when the Prophet says, "Curse be on gold, curse be on silver," means that whoever somehow holds up gold and silver will be cursed, because these are cursed things from the mouth of the Prophet. And if this is the case, someone having lots of it, it would be somehow a curse on them rather than a blessing on them. Great wealth then would become, instead of becoming a blessing, it would become a curse. And this was something difficult to accept by the companions. And it became very difficult for the companions. The companions found it very difficult to absorb it, to understand it. It's why the Prophet says such a thing. فَسَأَلَ Umar ibn al-Khattab asked the Prophet, فَقَالَ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ أَيَّ الْمَالِ نَتَّخِذْ. O Prophet, what type of property, what type of wealth we should collect? Because you are cursing gold, you are cursing silver, so what type of wealth we should collect? فَقَالَ لِسَانًا ذَاكَرًا وَقَلْبًا شَاكَرًا. A tongue which remembers Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the pure wealth. This is the real wealth. And a heart which is thankful and grateful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes we don't know what blessings Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to us. Just the very fact that we can stand up and pray before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with an attentive heart, this is much more blessing than lots of wealth and property that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives to other people. And this is the wealth that Prophet says, you have to be after this type of wealth. Lisanan dhakiran, a remembering tongue, remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and a thankful heart. وَزَوْجَةً مُؤْمِنَةً تُعِينُ أَحَدَكُمْ عَلَىٰ دِينِهِ. And a faithful spouse who would help you over your religion. Now, usually what do we want gold and silver for? Money is to give us a good life, a comfortable life. Of course, the meaning of comfort is different for people. Some people find comfort in less money, because if you have less money, you have less engagement, less preoccupation of the mind, more time to spend with your Lord, for supplication, and many other issues. Comfort certainly is not very much parallel with wealth. Of course, wealth would bring some comfort, but comfort, real comfort, is comfort of heart, and comfort of heart doesn't come with money. If Allah gives you comfort of heart, a thankful heart, and a tongue that would remember him all the time, and of course a wife or a husband that would help you, is a help for you to get nearer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then this is the real wealth. And you cannot buy this with money. It's impossible to buy these things. Al-qalbu shakir, and al-lisanu dhakir, and a faithful wife or husband, you cannot buy this with money. This is just a blessing that has to come from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is what you have to be after, rather than being after silver and gold. Okay, now the following verse, of course, is a terrifying verse for those who accumulate gold and silver and just hold it up for the sake of it. It says, يَوْمَ يُحْمَى عَلَيْهَا فِي نَارِ جَهَنَّمْ فَتُقْوَى بِهَا جِبَاهُهُمْ وَجُنُوبُهُمْ وَظُهُورُهُمْ هَذَا مَا كَنَزْتُمْ لِأَنفُسِكُمْ فَذُوقُوا مَا كُنْتُمْ تَكْنِزُونَ. On the day when these gold and silver shall be heated in hellfire, and therewith branded on their foreheads, their sides, and their backs. This is what you treasured up for yourselves. Now, what is the meaning of this verse? We can take it to be literal. We can just stress, emphasize the literal meaning. It means that you take your gold and silver with yourself to the hell. And then that gold and silver will be heated up, and you will be branded by that heated material on your foreheads, your sides, and your backs. This is the literal meaning of it. On the other hand, we can take it to be completely metaphorical, saying that, well, whatever you are holding up here is going to become a burden for you, a punishment for you, a cumbersome type of material in the hereafter, in the hell. And just divest it of its literal meaning completely, saying, okay, there is a punishment. Now, I don't think we could take it completely to be literal, and we shouldn't take it completely to be metaphorical, because to take it completely to be metaphorical means that we have to just leave the meaning completely, saying Allah doesn't mean anything by this. Just want to say that there is a big punishment there. And if this is the case, why he has used the gold and silver to be heated up, rather than just saying you are going to be punished with hellfire or with a very strong heat or something like that? There should be a meaning attached to this literal meaning, which is of course not very literal, not saying that the gold and silver will be taken to the other world, because this gold and silver is going to be destroyed when this world is going to change. They don't take the gold and silver with them, certainly. And for example, if you have hoarded up 4,000 coins of gold, I mean, we don't have coins of gold now, but we have just credits on banknotes. But in the old times, if they had, for example, collected 4,000 coins or 10,000 coin of gold, those 10,000 coins would have been transferred to the hell, and they would be heated up, and they would be branded by that. Certainly, this is not what is meant by it. What is the meaning? When we say that we should find a meaning between the complete metaphorical meaning and between the complete literal meaning, what is that meaning? What is that middle meaning? Now, if we refer to many different verses of the Quran, we would find that whatever we have here in terms of different matters or different materials, there is a corresponding reality to all these in other worlds. In the middle world, in Alamul Barzakh, or in the world of images, Alamul Mithal, in which the image of whatever exists in this world exists in that Alamul Mithal. That's the world of images. And then in the hereafter, there is another reality corresponding to what exists here, which is completely different to its reality here. But it is a corresponding reality. They are quite linked to each other. This is true of actions as well. Whatever we do in this world, our actions in this world are very difficult to locate. For example, when you tell a lie, when someone tells a lie, it's as if someone tells the truth, because it's just words coming out, moving the air, hitting the ear of other people. It's the same thing. What is the difference between lie and truth? How can you locate it? It's very difficult in terms of material thing to locate it. However, this lie and truth would find a corresponding reality which is more real in Alamul Mithal, in the middle world. And that's why when we go to the middle world, we find these things to be more real than what they are here at the moment. And then when we go to the hereafter, to paradise or to hell, we find corresponding realities to these actions, which are much, much more real than what they are in Alamul Mithal, in the middle world. So when we tell a lie here, that lie is just air. It's something which is in our head. If no one finds about it, it's just right in our head. There is no outside reality for it. But when we go to Alamul Mithal, there is an outside reality for it, which corresponds to it. And when we go to the to paradise, inshallah, or when people go to hell, God forbid, then there is a corresponding reality to it, which is very formidable in the hell and very pleasant in the paradise. So, when someone holds up gold and silver and does not spend it in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this is of course a concept. That gold and silver is not something which would matter, because you might hold up gold and silver to spend it in the way of Allah or to keep it for yourself. What is important is what is in your mind, which has no reality outside really. However, when we go to the other world, what is in our mind comes outside. This is a very important issue even to understand our situation in hell and in paradise. You know that in paradise, people have whatever they want. لَهُمْ مَا يَشَاءُونَ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ Whatever they want is there for them. It means whatever comes into their head would become a reality outside. In this world, of course, we have imaginations. You can imagine many things. You can wish many things, which would not find realization at all. You might wish, for example, to have a horse with two wings or four wings and to fly with it. You can create that in your imagination, but not outside. However, in the other world, what comes into your imagination would become a reality. And that's why if you, for example, wish to have a horse with four wings in paradise, you would have it. As soon as it comes to your head, it would be realized outside. And that is the meaning of لَهُمْ مَا يَشَاءُونَ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ Whatever they want is there in the vicinity of the Lord. And this is actually a quality of God, isn't it? Whatever He wants would be. Whatever He wishes would materialize. إنما أمره إذا أراد شيئا أن يقول له كن فيكون. His situation is as such. Whenever he wants something, he just says be and it is. It means just the wanting, the will would create. And this is what our situation is going to be in paradise actually, as Allah has said. And in many ahadiths we have that God has created us to make us an example of His own self. And we have in the Bible, and of course in lots of our ahadiths, that God created human after His own image. It means that whatever He can do, you can do as well. Well, not in this world of course, but when you go to paradise, inshallah, we have in hadith that, O my servant, obey me, and I will make you like myself. I want something, I say be, and it will be, and I make you to be like this. When you want something, you just say be and it will be. So of course this is a great favor. This is a mercy which cannot be measured. It's beyond our understanding how God can give all these to these many, many millions of people. And nothing would become diminished from His own power and from His own mulk, so to speak. And I mean, if we want to think in these terms, we will go mad. How God is powerful. How powerful God is. So, what is in our imagination would become real in the other world. We tell a lie, it's in our mind, but it would become a reality outside us in the other world. We do a riba, we backbite. We hurt someone in their honors. It is in our head, it is on the tongue, it goes on the air, it just hits the ears, but it will become a reality later on when we go to the other world. And that's very easy. I mean, even in this world, when you want to make something, first of all you think of it. It would become just a concept at the beginning. It's a concept. I mean, all these things that we have created, that we have invented, at the beginning it was just in the mind, it was just a concept. And we realize it outside, gradually. Of course, our power is very limited in this world. That's why it would be realized gradually in this world. We wanted to make a machine to think for us. It was, at the beginning, a concept. But it became real, isn't it? Now we have computers, it would think for us, isn't it? We wanted to have something on which we could fly. It was impossible, but it was a concept in our mind. But we realized it gradually. with our experience and with our knowledge, and now we have aeroplanes, we fly with it, isn't it? We have actually brought about whatever we wanted. The concept first came into the mind, and then we realized it. Now, when we go to other worlds, these concepts and this power of realization of concepts will become more vigorous, and we become more powerful and more powerful until we reach the stages, the higher stages of Jannah, that we can do whatever we want, whatsoever. Of course, there are some people in this world who can do things which come to their mind as well. And we have in a very beautiful hadith that some people, just with the help of Allah's power, just they say Bismillah in the name of God, and they do things. And this is what is said in the Quran, that, oh Jesus, remember my favor on you when you raise the death with my permission. You just mentioned my name and you did it with my permission. That's a passcode Allah gave to Isa alayhi salam. Just the passcode. Just mention the passcode and do whatever you want. Heal the lepers and raise the dead and make a bird by clay and give it life. Just mention that passcode that I gave you. And this is why in hadith we have Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim min al-Abd bimanzalat kun min al-Rab. If a servant is really, really sincere, he mentions Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and he can do things that Allah can do when he wants to do, and he says kun. For him, kun be is the word. For us, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim is the word. We do it with his permission. Of course, when I say we, I mean human beings generally, and at top of it, people like Jesus Christ, like Muhammad, like Musa alayhi salam. These type of caliber of people, they can do it. Now, when we go to the other world, of course, our power would increase. The concepts would become realities. The things which went in our head and in our mind and in our heart would go outside us. And then they either punish us or annoy us, or would give us pleasure. If they are good, they would give us pleasure. If they are bad, they would punish us. Now, this verse which says, يَوْمَ يُحْمَى عَلَيْهَا فِي نَارَ جَهَنَّمْ, on the day when these shall be heated in hellfire, and there with branded on their foreheads, their sides and their backs. Of course, it's not the same gold and silver being transferred to the hell and heated up and branding them. It is just the concept of hoarding up that amount, which would find some sort of reality, which would brand these people. And in lots of ahadith, especially in ahadith of Mi'raj, when Prophet talks about seeing people, what were their situations in the hereafter? Of course, Prophet had a vision of hell and paradise. Paradise and hell are not there at the moment, or is not the dimension that we could see. However, he had a vision of what is going to happen. And he saw, for example, the arrogant people, as we have in that case, the arrogant people were just like ants being stamped by everyone, being trampled upon by everyone. This is the reality of arrogance, which would find itself, realize itself in the hereafter. Or, for example, people who were backbiting, people who were immodest, they had some sort of reality outside themselves which were annoying them. And all these riwayat and ahadith that we have about when someone dies, their actions would go into their grave with them. Of course, our actions, what are our actions? There is another dimension of whatever we do in the alam, in the world of images, in the middle world, which would it is attached to us now. We don't see it. But when we go to the other world, that would become a reality. It would either annoy us or give us pleasure. And this is the meaning of the hadith that the Prophet mentioned, if I remember it correctly, that, O children of Adam, hoard whatever you want, since you are going to depart from it one day. And wish whatever you wish, But this is going to cease one day. And do whatever you want to do. But be careful, whatever you do is going to be with you until the eternity. The eternity, of course, is a very terrifying concept. It means that in these 60, 70 years, whatever we do, it is going to be with us forever, forever. I remember Marty Mutahhari, Shaheed Mutahhari, he was a student of Allama Tabatabai. He said sometimes Allama Tabatabai mentioned eternity and he started to cry and shiver. Because he could contemplate, what does that mean? When we say, whatever you do is going to be with you for eternity. Just these 60, 70 years. Sometimes one thinks it's not fair, is it? I mean, just a little time we have. And what consequences is going to attach to us? And one wishes that maybe it was better we did not accept that amana that Allah actually offered to the earth and heavens and mountains, and they did not accept it. But human being accepted it. And now we wonder what we can do about it. But of course it means that human has that power. We have that power to realize in this very short time what we have to do. And if we don't do it, then of course for eternity we are going to be troubled by what we do. So when the verse mentions that on the day when these shall be heated in hellfire and therewith branded on their foreheads, their sides and their backs, that concept of barring other people from using the wealth, the rizq, the sustenance that Allah has created for them, this is going to become a cumbersome type of issue for them on the Day of Judgment. Now, why it is said that they will be branded on their foreheads, on their sides, and on their backs? Is it, again, completely metaphorical, or we have to take it literally? Well, none of them. As I said, all these verses, we have to take a middle course, a middle type of understanding between literal meaning and pure, sheer, metaphorical meaning. And the meaning is, as some of the exegetes have mentioned, of course it's very difficult to visualize this, why foreheads, sides and backs. Some people say their foreheads because they have actually bowed down and prostrated to the wealth of this world rather than to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They have actually made obeisance to the wealth and property rather than to Allah. So their foreheads are going to be branded by that heated material. And their sides, because they usually carry it with their hands just pressing it to their sides, and their backs because they relied on it, because they usually rely on the wealth of this world rather than on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is some exegetes have mentioned, but of course it's very difficult to visualize why. تُكْوَى بِهَا جِبَاهُهُمْ وَجُنُوبُهُمْ وَظُهُورُهُمْ Their sides and their backs and their foreheads are going to be branded with it. هَذَا مَا كَنَزْتُمْ لَأَنفُسَكُمْ Then they would be said, this is what you treasured up for yourself. And it is true. That is what they have treasured up. Here we think that it is good, it is gold, it is silver we are treasuring. While we don't know, we do not realize that we are treasuring up trouble for ourselves. Of course, not us, I don't think we have any treasure or wealth, but those people who do it, they don't know that they are actually hoarding up trouble because they are barring people from that sustenance. There is a saying of Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha, who says, مَا جَاعَ فَقِيرٌ إِلَّا بِمَا مُتَّ غَنِيٍ No one, no poor person would have been hungry, would be hungry, unless that his sustenance is with some wealthy people. They have to spend it upon them. And if they don't, then they are going to be held responsible about it. So, of course, these are something which is very difficult jurisprudentially to analyze. But I think we have to mold our jurisprudence according to these very general concepts of how wealth should be distributed in a Muslim society, in an Islamic society. And if there are rich people and there are people who go hungry, then certainly those rich people are going to be held responsible for it in one way or in another. Or the authorities are going to be held responsible for it because they don't take those wealth to be spent. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created whatever is on the earth for all the people, not for special people to be completely satiated, satisfied, and some people to go hungry. If this is the case, it is not due to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is due to our distribution system. It means that we don't have a good system of distribution of wealth. We allow some people to have so much that they could not calculate what they have. And we allow some people that to go hungry. This is the fault falls in our distribution system rather than in Allah's destiny and taqdeer, whatever He has actually destined for people. So, of course, they have to be rebuked like this. هَذَا مَا كَنَسْتُمْ لَأَنفُسَكُمْ. This is what you treasured up for yourselves. فَذُوقُوا مَا كُنْتُمْ تَكْنِزُونَ. So taste what you have treasured. Now, this tasting, of course, is a very interesting concept because it is usually, of course, mentioned in the Quran. We are going to taste our actions in the hereafter. And tasting is, of course, the closest type of experience that one would have. When you see a food, of course, you see the color, you see the nice appearance of it. Then if the smell comes, you get a better experience of it. You have the appearance and the smell. Then if you touch it, you have a better experience of it. But you wouldn't have the finest and final experience until you taste it. So taste is the closest type of experience that we use in this world, actually. And in the Quran, usually the punishment and the reward is mentioned that they are going to taste it, meaning that they are going to get the closest experience of what they do in this world. They get the closest experience in the other world. And in what other words we have, يَوْمَ تَبْلُو كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا أَسْلَفَتْ. The day every soul would experience closely whatever they have sent forth. And this is very horrifying, of course. We just have to rely on the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Never ever ask for justice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because it is the justice of Allah that we are fearful from. You know, Allah never do injustice. Never his ya man la yukhsha illa adluh. It's only your justice that we are fearful of. We believe that we shouldn't be dealt with justice of Allah, we just with grace. And of course, if you want to taste whatever we have done in this world, to experience it, all of us are going to be in trouble. There is forgiveness, of course. There is just redemption of people, wiping out whatever they have done. All these would happen so that we are not going to face a troublesome life, inshallah, in the hereafter. And this is all relying on Allah's mercy and grace rather than on His justice. So, فَذُوقُوا مَا كُنْتُمْ تَكْنِزُونَ. Now, in the next verse, we go to a different topic, which, of course, is another type of injustice that the people in Jahiliyyah were doing, to kill each other. And Allah is forbidding it, again reiterating that this is a wrong thing that you are doing. Indeed, إِنَّ عِدَّةَ الشُّهُورَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ إِثْنَا عَشَرَ شَهْرًا فِي كِتَابِ اللَّهِ يَوْمَ خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Indeed, the number of months with Allah is 12 months. In Allah's book, it means the book of creation, of course, the day when He created the heavens and the earth. Of these, four are sacred. مِنْهَا أَرْبَعَةٌ هُرُمٌ. That is the upright religion, so do not wrong yourselves during them. Fight all the polytheists just as they fight you all, and know that Allah is with the God-weary. Now, this concept of the sacred months, the 4 months in which battle was forbidden, and they were respected monks, is something very old, was something very old among the Arabs. That was a sunnah, a tradition laid down by Ibrahim, peace be on him, that although, of course, you know, Arabs were warriors, they all the time they fought with each other. And no one could stop them of doing this. Even the Prophet, although he brought fraternity and brotherhood among them, you see how afterwards they fought against each other again. Now, Ibrahim, to set a rest for people, he forbade battle and fighting for 4 months. And these are the respected months, which is 1 month separated. That is Rajab, and 3 months, three continuous consecutive months, that is Dhul-Qa'dah, Dhul-Hajjah, and Muharram. These 3 months, of course, are respected months in which battle was forbidden, and also in Rajab. Now, in these 3 months, usually people set out on going to pilgrimage, because, of course, there was a relief from fighting. No one would have exposed them to killings and to trouble and to lootings, and the whole idea of pilgrimage actually was sustained due to these 4 months. Of course, 3 months, which are the months of Hajj, Al-Hajj Ashhurul Ma'lumat, Dhul-Qa'dah, Dhul-Hajjah, and Muharram are, of course, Ashhurul Hajj. Sorry, Shawwal, Dhul-Qa'dah, and Dhul-Hajjah, and Muharram, of course, when they wanted to go back. And Rajab was a month for Umrah. And, of course, they could do this because of this relief which Ibrahim had given them. Now, they tried to fiddle with this these sacred months to be able to somehow open the door for fighting. And you see, they couldn't bear not to fight for 3 months. It was very difficult for them. So sometimes they fiddled it around. They said, okay, although we observe the 4 months, but we do 2 consecutive months, and 1 month we do it later on. And for Muharram, for example, we fight. For Safar, we don't fight. And all these different sorts of issues, which were very complicated type of calculation they had for it. And these two verses,